Welcome to Bootstrap MD, the Physician Entrepreneurs Podcast, your source to help you, the entrepreneurial doctor, live life on your own terms. Get new ideas and inspiration to help you find more balance in your professional life. If you're ready to get the knowledge without all the hype, you've come to the right place. It's the Bootstrap MD Podcast. And now your host, Dr. Mike Wu Ming.
This episode is sponsored by GoToConnect. Modern practices need a modern phone system. GoToConnect brings your phones, patient messaging, video visits, and scheduling into one platform, helping you stay HIPAA compliant with an AI receptionist that never misses a call. Built for outpatient clinics and physician-owned practices. No in-house IT required. See a demo at goto.com/healthcare. If you've ever tried to scale a private practice without an IT department, you already know the front door of your clinic isn't your website, it's your phone system. It's how patients actually reach you, they schedule with you, and decide whether you're worth the drive. Now, today we're going to be talking about the patient communication infrastructure most independent physicians inherit by accident and what it actually takes to modernize it without hiring a tech team. You're listening to Bootstrap MD, the podcast for physician entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Wu Ming. Now, a quick note before we get started, today's episode is brought to you in partnership with GoTo, and our guest is a member of the GoTo team. I want to be upfront about that. Sponsorships like this are part of what keeps Bootstrap MD running and free for you to listen to every week. That said, this isn't a commercial. It's a real conversation about a real operational problem that most independent practices like myself are dealing with, and I appreciate you taking the time to do your own due diligence on anything you hear here. As with every episode, listen for the ideas first and evaluate the tools on your own terms. And my guest today leads product strategy at one of the largest cloud communication platforms serving small and mid-sized businesses, including thousands of healthcare practices. He spends his day inside the messy mill of how clinics actually run. The missed calls, the overloaded front desk, the after-hours patient texts, the scheduling leaks that quietly cost practices real money. And his perspective, which I think is going to resonate with a lot of you, is that AI in healthcare isn't some far-off enterprise thing anymore. It's already operationalizing inside small private practices, and most physicians don't realize how accessible it's become. Now, joining me today is Adam Peeler. Adam is the Director of Product Management at GoTo Technologies, the company behind GoTo Connect, an all-in-one AI-powered communications platform built for healthcare and other service-driven businesses. He leads product strategy across phone systems, messaging, video, AI receptionists, and EHR integrated workflows for clinics that need enterprise-grade tools without an enterprise-grade IT budget. He's a frequent voice for GoTo at industry events, most recently at HIMSS, where he's been making that case that small practices, not just hospital systems, are where some of the most practical healthcare AI is actually getting deployed today. Adam, welcome to Bootstrap MD. It's such a pleasure to have you here. And I want to give my listeners kind of a quick picture of what you actually do at GoTo and how you ended up working in healthcare communications.
Great, thanks. And I'm excited to be here. A great show. I love the entrepreneurial spirit, and I come from GoTo, which we have a big portfolio of IT products, but more focused on the GoTo Connect side, which is more about bringing robust telecommunications into the hands of not IT, or into sometimes we call it the accidental IT. You know, it's not my primary position, but I'm handling it, right? So I've been with the company for a long time, 12 years, and mainly focused on cloud voice and unified communications. But at GoTo, we have a strong entrepreneurial founder mindset where really want to go where the customers are, you know, go where the work is. So I've spent a lot of my time in automotive dealerships, in healthcare clinics, and the law offices. And over the years, we've seen more and more ambulatory care practices adopting more and more of the unified communications. So not just the phone calls, but the text messages, the web chats, and in recent years, a larger portion of AI adoption than any other industry. So I've spent a disproportionate number of my time in and out of clinics and outpatient facilities and critical care locations, and really hands in the workflows and, by frankly, the chaos that you see at any local clinic.
Yeah, there's definitely chaos. It's just kind of part of our day that we're used to. So like you said, you spent a lot of time inside small and mid-sized businesses, including healthcare clinics. So what surprised you most about how healthcare practices are actually run compared to other industries that you worked in?
Yeah, I mean, the main part, if you kind of get into the chaos and the sticky notes aspect of actually handling on-site facilities, what surprised me the most was just the number of missed phone calls, the number of voicemails. A lot of the communication strategy is make sure you have a shared voicemail box, make sure you call that customer back. But if you look at any sales and marketing-led industry, you'd have a 95% answer rate. But with a lot of the customers that we'd look at and sit down and research, you know, we'd see as low as 70% answer rate. Just a disproportionate number of on-site, boots-on-the-ground foot traffic with peak inbound phone calls and text messages and just a lot of quantity of everything happening, which leads to stress and burden and employee burnout.
Yeah, it's crazy. And oftentimes they're doing multiple different tasks. One is trying to answer phone, and then they're probably giving an injection or then answering a patient's concern at the front desk. So yeah, I'm used to where it's all hands on deck sometimes. And with this, you know, it always seems we're still lacking. To be honest, Adam, we still use fax machines. Okay. This is how bad healthcare is in there. So I have a dedicated fax number with hospitals, and that's what they use. So we're still behind the times, but you know, we got AI. AI is 2026. Everybody knows about AI. And you've been pretty vocal that AI in healthcare is moving from emerging to operationalizing. So in plain terms, what does that shift mean for a doctor who is running, let's say, 1-to-5 provider practice?
Yeah. Big leap from last year to this year. And I think you'll see exponential leaps going forward. But it's really about the shift from a toy into something that actually is a core part of my business. And so the main portion of operationalizing is seeing things like AI terms of service baked in, or things like accessible use policies for your employees. These are examples of operationalizing where the last thing you want is your employees or practitioners using their personal ChatGPT or just random off-the-shelf tool to actually do core clinical functions. And so operationalizing means from this toy that I can pop on and do a funny summarization or even summarize an email to actually something that's driving patient engagement.
Yeah, it is. This is the year. And it's both exciting and, to be honest, for some of our listeners, so scary at the time. So let's talk about the front door of a practice. You got the phones, you got the messaging, you got the scheduling. You know, from your data, what does, quote, normal activity look like for a small clinic? How many calls are getting missed or dropped or never returned? You said it's up to 30%.
Yeah, and you still see predominantly phone calls, especially with aging population and kind of a laggard on some of the web-based or chat-based or text-based channels. So disproportionate voice phone calls. And yeah, I mean, 30% missed calls, especially during peak times. If you think about after hours activities, like over the weekends, you have that Monday and Tuesday rush in of peak call volume. And then you kind of have a slower kind of tail off for the rest of the week. And so you have staffing issues where you need to staff a certain portion of the week versus a second portion of the week. But ultimately, these type of non-linear activities mean that at any point in time, you could be inundated and unready for it. So, you know, the phone calls are coming, whether you're answering them or not is up to your business.
Yeah. And you're losing money, right? You're losing money off the table. I mean, I know for some, we have many clinics like myself, or it's hybrid model or even cash based. So if you're not returning those calls, they're going to the next one. They're going down the street to someone else. So it's critical. 30% is a big chunk of money left on the table.
And in the studies that we've done in partnerships with companies like Metrigy, is that as much as 60% of patients will simply go somewhere else if they have a bad communication experience.
Yeah. And then they're never going to come back again, right? So it's important that you have that comeback. So my audience are physician entrepreneurs, and we talk a lot about marketing. So we're talking about leads. We're talking about referrals. We're talking about getting more visibility. And you make the case that the bigger leak is downstream of marketing. So walk me through that. What do you mean by that?
So you could grab any marketing or patient engagement community director type of role, and they could tell you how every activity, ROI, click-through rate on Tuesday versus social, whatever, but absolutely nothing when you ask them, well, what happens when the customer picks up the phone? And so my argument has been is that your phone channel, whether it's, you know, calls or texts, is actually your largest marketing channel of any of them. but they simply goes unmeasured. Who cares? It's a bit like the old adage that 50% of your marketing works. You just don't know which 50%. It's even worse with some of these because you're just throwing thousands of dollars in Google ad spends or flyers and not actually knowing how it's driving traffic in or traffic to your digital channels like phones and text. So I like to think of the phone number as, you know, one of your marketing assets. You can have your main phone number. You can have a multitude of phone numbers, all of which you can measure type of traffic over that phone number based off of the type of marketing activities you're doing. So it's a bit, you know, closing one eye and hoping that your ROI is coming.
Yeah, that's an eye opener. So what's the operational pattern that you see in clinics that are quietly losing patients without realizing it? Is there a tell? What are you seeing?
It's really hard to tell because the inefficiencies are masked by the total quantity of things happening, getting back to the chaos. But there are some telltale things. So in the easiest example, when you don't have a robust phone system that you're able to measure some of these stuff, when you have gaps in your schedule, when you have good foot traffic, but no one answering the phone calls, and you have a lot of kind of cancellations and not rebookings, that's the biggest one. Your appointment calendar can go from full to empty like that on any Monday or Tuesday, especially when you pull in the high majority of folks that simply don't want to go see a doctor or have, you know, white coat syndrome like I do. Any type of friction is going to stop me from trying to reengage. And the ones that do have some ability to measure how their phone system is doing, we use a metric called a first call resolution. So what you'll see with clinics that are getting a lot of calls, even if they have a third-party answering service or an off-site answering service, so that way somebody's only job is answering the phones, regardless of what they do with that phone call, you'll see 20,000 calls is really 12,000 unique calls. Because people are simply hanging up and calling back, especially the older generation.
Oh, yeah, too. And like I said, you're on the phone, well, let's say with a patient and you're talking with something. Well, that no one can call you and you can't do anything about it. And it's costing you. I've seen it even with my own staff. I go, they're on the phone for like 20 minutes and that's our only line. And who knows how many missed opportunities that we have, but just something like that. So if a doctor is running solo, or maybe they just have like a one front desk person and usually like a medical assistant, what's the realistic threshold where the manual approach may be actually starting to cost them money?
Usually if you have three providers or even one or two physical locations, you're probably missing 10 to 15 appointments per week just based off of the inability to dynamically schedule or take that communication. And so, I mean, minimally $2,000, $3,000 a week in lost revenue is just going out the door.
Wow. I didn't realize it was that high. I think you just threw that number. Just like that just probably paused some people listening to this call here. So let's demystify this term. We've heard this term, unified communications. Sounds like a buzzword, but what is it really all about? If a physician is launching a new practice, what are the components that they should think about together rather than, you know, buying it piecemeal?
And it's like unified communications, fragmented, stacked, plain old telephone service before you even get to the acronyms that we all love so much. But essentially when we say unified is you have a phone number that's able to have calls, texts, and chat and fax, just to bring our favorite thing, fax back in, all in the same phone number. So you'll see a fragmented stack where I'll have some kind of outbound texting solution built into Epic. And then I'll have my plain old telephone service for inbound calls and basic outbound calls. And then I'll have some kind of scheduling integration, you know, that's bolted on. And so when we say fragmented, each of those is essentially a different communication channel that without the ability to monitor it as a one entity, it looks like four patients essentially. And you have to do the work to bring it together in your core clinical system.
Yeah. So let's talk about that because oftentimes, you know, like myself, there are different vendors for different things. You got phone, you got text, video, scheduling, EHR integration. So what's the actual cost of that fragmentation beyond just the monthly subscriptions?
I mean, you see some customers and the providers with 7 to 10 different communication tools, all of which costing $3,000 to $4,000 per year, minimally.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we see when you bring all that in into a unified stack, I mean, you're saving $30,000 a year sometimes, but that's without even measuring the ROI of no longer needing a third-party answering service or after-hours things or any of that stuff. But, and then as well as the ability to measure that unified patient journey. It's no longer four patients. It's a single patient, a single conversation that you're able to see that they called back multiple times, that nobody called them back, that type of stuff.
Wow. Yeah. Crazy. So we've got HIPAA. We always worry about HIPAA on here and, you know, being compliant with HIPAA. And then the first thing that comes up when the doctor hears, hey, it's a cloud-based system. So what should physicians be asking a vendor to make sure they're actually protected, not just paying for a label?
Yeah, good question. The first one I always like to look at is the vendor willing to sign a BAA, a business associate agreement. That puts some teeth into the notification and the type of access. But really, it's all about PHI, right? Especially when you walk into a clinic and my name and date of birth is on a sticky note sitting over here and I'm repeating back on the phone call what you said to me out where everyone can hear. And so when you look at electronic PHI, the opportunity for it to really kind of get out of hand is right there, right? So it's, you know, do you have a BAA? How do you store your PHI? And how can you show me how everything is encrypted, whether it's in storage or in transit and all that?
Wow. So another buzzword, EHR integration. And where does EHR integration matter most in day-to-day operation? And where is it overhyped?
Yeah, I like to think of the EHR as that kind of tier one core clinical system. You know, that's where the real patient information is going to happen. And you want to keep that as clean and foolproof as possible. And where communication comes in is the ability to integrate with it to provide context to that patient record. So again, if you think about all the calls, texts, chat, and web history, what we want is we want to handle that communication, which is phone number based, and we want to transform that into first name, last name at the very little, because then you can do things like route calls based off of, is it a known patient or is it a new patient? Do I want them to go? Do I know that if they're calling, they're probably calling about a lab result, automatically routing them to lab results instead of saying press 1-4 or press 2-4. So what any kind of EHR integration does is it brings context to the phone numbers, who they are, why they're calling, what kind of history do you have with them, obviously without exposing any kind of EPHI to the open internet.
So over the last few weeks, we've just introduced on our podcast, we've been talking about a lot about AI, because that's what my audience has been asking for. That's what I'm interested in a lot. And we've been talking about AI in medical practices. So one phrase that has come up is this AI receptionist, and it gets thrown around a lot. But what does it actually mean today in 2026? What is it actually doing? And maybe what is it not ready to do? Are we having these robots sit on the front desk, or what is exactly going on?
Definitely. So we think of AI receptionist as a bit of your digital workforce.
Yeah.
Your digital workforce can be on the front lines answering calls and texts, or it can be kind of in the back office analyzing how things went and offering non-biased summaries and here's how you could do better type of trainings. So when we think about the AI as the front line for your AI receptionist, this is essentially a voice agent, and it doesn't necessarily have to be over phone calls. A lot of folks will do over text message or web chat type of stuff, but it's essentially the ability to transform those complicated call trees where it's press 1-4, press 2-4, and then it gets you into a sound clip, and then it says press 1-4, press 2-4. And before you know it, you're in an offsite facility getting lab results for the veterinary clinic that somehow is attached, right? So it's about removing all of that and having basically a dynamic artificial intelligent agent that can say, tell me why you're calling. And it's able to take that voice, turn it into text, take the text and analyze the rules of engagement that you've set for it. So if they say billing, here's our billing extension. If they say my chest hurts, then say, hang up and call 911, you know, type of functionality. So that's really that frontline receptionist. And I think to your second point of what is it doing today and maybe what is it not ready for? Again, in that 20 to 40% range of inbound phone calls, a lot of them are kind of basic FAQs. What are your hours? What is your location? How long do lab results take? So there's a lot of kind of just basic things that they can do. So the first thing the AI receptionist can do just totally fine is tell me why you're calling and answer some basic FAQs. So being able to put in your, when they ask this, here's our standard answer that we train all of our employees how to answer.
Got it.
We're starting to grow its legs, but still having trouble to do is these more complicated workflows. Like when we want to rebook an appointment, there's a number of different steps we want to do. We want to first check this and check that. And there's a bit of that human in the loop guidance that we all provide better patient care because we know so much about the different processes and rules of intake and insurance things. So whenever we get to these multi-step modalities, it's still not quite there, but every year, even at this point, every month, more trainable, better scope, and more optionality to really handle that front of house, front line.
So if you could walk us through like a realistic before and after, let's say you've got a solo doctor, he installs an AI-powered front desk on a Monday. What's going to happen like in a week from now? What changes after a week? What changes in 90 days? You know, practice has to be prepared about change, especially when you're dealing with staff. I get this all the time. But just have a realistic expectation of what to do between those timeframes that I just mentioned.
Sure. So let's say that your clinical communication strategy is get a human first because we offer the warmth and the compassion. But if we can't get a human, I want to make sure that you get attended to. And so what we'll see is initial deployment of after hours or instead of voicemail. So instead of voicemail, you have your AI agent and says, hey, sorry you missed your call, but I'm here to help. Can you tell me what you're calling about? So the immediacy of that is the ability to kind of show up on work on Monday or Friday in your example and see a summary of what customers had called in for, right? So if they're calling after hours, I'm calling for this. Now, when you call them back, you already have the context. You already have the transcript or the summary. What was their sentiment? Were they anxious? Were they mad? And so when you call them back, you have a lot of kind of pre-canned information for you to call them back. So that's the immediacy you get is get the patient contacted when they call in after hours or during peak. And then when you call them back, you have full context. But once you start hitting 90 days, we typically see about a 17 to 20% out of the box resolution, which means that it's answering those basic FAQs when integrated into your core clinical system where it can modify or check the status of appointments. If I'm just calling for, I don't know what my appointment is, can you look it up? It can look it up, send them a text message that your appointment is on this time, reply back to this text message if you want our staff to reply back to you. So you start adding those up is now you're not missing 30% of calls, you're actually automatically handling 20% of calls. And then the rest of the calls, you want your humans to handle, and they're going to have much better context about who the patient is and why they're calling.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that in just a moment. So a lot of my docs right now, they're probably using an answering service. So how does AI fit into that? How does it change the math? Can it replace the answering service? What are we seeing here?
Yeah, I think in a lot of cases it can, because coming back to our facts, I was in a clinic either in Florida or Texas, I don't remember, but their process was for after hours, it'll go to this third-party answering service. They'll ask them why they're calling. They'll write down a note, and then they'll fax that note back to the clinic because they're wanting to keep all the communication as secure as possible, and an old-school fax line is still secure. All of that is costing them $1 to $3 per call, right? Just to simply get something that's worse than any kind of digital option. You know, something in the morning when you go to your fax machine, you have a whole bunch of handwritten notes sent to you. So in the worst case scenario, that's an example of it. In the best case scenario, some of these answering services do have access to a portion of your EHR and they are able to kind of look up and modify appointments. But even that's costing you $1 to $3 per call. So, I mean, the math immediately gets into a fraction, a tenth of that. I think we get into when you're at 25, 30 cents per minute for any kind of AI receptionist, you're replacing $1 to $3. So it's a big trade-off. Theoretically, if all things go well, a better experience for both parties.
So you mentioned about the human touch, and I think that's one area where doctors are worried about that they're going to lose the personal touch that their practice, to be honest, is built on. So where is the opportunity for the humans to take over?
There's a couple areas. One area where it requires judgment. So a lot of times you can squeeze appointments in, right? You know, you have a 15-minute gap here, but you know that this typically is quicker than this. And there's just a lot of if and buts that it's hard for an AI receptionist whose job is to kind of execute a systematic set of instructions that humans are just inherently better. So when you think about emotional distress or complex scheduling or anything insurance, when it comes to kind of looking at that, it's definitely better to have either human or human in the loop, what we call, where humans are being assisted by AI that's able to retrieve information, but they're able to make the ultimate judgment. But we do still see a large percentage of callers that simply don't want to talk to AI. And that's okay, right? You want to talk to AI when it's natural and can do the job. But when you want a human, I need to talk to a human. No problem. Let's get you to a human. You know, so you still have to have that coordination between them.
So if a physician was to pilot like just one AI-powered communication feature in a practice, let's say in the next 90 days, what do you think that they should start with?
So first, your after-hours AI receptionist is really the best one to kind of start with because the risk of getting it wrong is low, right? Instead of going to voicemail, you have something that says, hey, why are you calling? It's almost like a visual voicemail, right? I'm calling for this. I want this. And at the very worst, it can provide a summary. At the very best, it can answer some questions like what's your address and what are your hours? The other area that I like a lot is when you're managing your employees, when you're a supervisor and you have a call center or a front desk and all these communications are happening and there's a lot of emotions, we have this product called AI Quality Management where you're able to kind of look at the way the progression of the call and who said what and make sure that your front desk or your clinical staff ask a script of questions. So for example, like we always ask what's your insurance or we always ask, are you local to us just to make sure you're calling the right clinic? If you think about the quality aspect of it, of how are your employees doing, if you have to listen to all calls or read all transcripts, you kind of start putting your bias into it. Did I have enough food to eat that day? Is my blood sugar low? Did you say something bad about my favorite baseball team? So where AI does a really good job is simply analyzing the audio signals and who said what did they say and provide kind of a training score for you to then look back and then provide your management analysis. So I really like how well did this call go? AI does really well for that type of stuff.
Yeah, it's incredible. So some of the context, I use it for IO notes and it's getting rid of all the fluff and it's just getting better, better and better. So, you know, here the name of our podcast is Bootstrap MD. So we've got a number of listeners who are running lean, to be honest, either they're starting in their first independent practice or maybe their side practice. And so what's your honest take on how a doctor, maybe without IT support, should approach making a decision like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first part is starting with the pain point. Like, what do you know to be true? Where do you know that you're failing, you know, to engage with your patients or handling it? So if you start with that one thing, so a couple examples, or missing too many calls, or I'm paying too much money to third-party professional services to make any change to things I feel I can do myself, or my staff is overwhelmed. Most of the vendors should be able to demo that workflow in some secure way. Not that it stops there, but because you're really picking a partner. You're picking a partner that has your back when things go wrong or doesn't charge you an arm and a leg if you want to make changes. Hopefully you can make changes yourself, but if you need to reach, call and reach out, that they are able to help you 24/7. But what I see the most with these clinics and ambulatory care areas is that a vendor that helps you set up and does the training, a lot of these solutions will simply kind of put you into a digital workflow without any kind of help. So again, to your original question, like what should you look for? Look for a vendor that has in-house training, in-house support, but also a vendor that can give you a complete end-to-end walkthrough for your main problem, whatever that problem is.
Yeah, it makes sense. So are there certain questions they should ask the vendor on these demo calls that you see from the other end, you know, that they're just not asking or even thinking about asking?
So a couple questions would be, how long does it take to typically set up a customer of my size? Some of these platforms may take 4 to 8 weeks to even get you live, and some of them might be as easy as 20 minutes, right? So a couple questions would be, can you show me what my front desk sees when a patient calls? Another might be, what happens when AI can't solve something? What's the flow? Because when AI can't solve something, some of these vertically SaaS companies where, say, their software only lives inside Athena Health, they're not going to be able to be manipulated in a way that matches your workflows, your patient engagement flows. And so what you want to see is when something can't do something, what type of control do you have to make it yours, make it custom, without paying a bunch of professional services to touch it?
Do you notice there may be a few mistakes that small businesses make when they pick a communication platform, the kind of mistakes a physician should avoid before they sign on to something?
The biggest one for me, and it's always obvious from the seat that I'm sitting in, but a lot of the buying criteria is cheapest seat. The phone is a utility. I think of it the same as an Ethernet cable or a copper wire. I simply need the cheapest seat possible. And that really puts you in a tough spot as communication gets more and more embedded into the workflows, as AI takes on more and more of those communications, that you'll simply just have the wrong partner or you'll have outages. Usually when I talk to customers and say, tell me about why you're buying, it's this feature at this price. But when I ask questions like, tell me why you fired your last vendor or why you're firing your vendor, it's always things like, well, too many outages, or when we want to make changes, we can't do it ourselves. And so just kind of shows the difference between your perceived value over your perceived cost, what you're actually wanting, what's actually higher weighted is quality and uptime in that example. So just going for the cheap seat puts you in a really tough spot, that if you're switching from an on-premise phone system, like a legacy phone system that's all copper wired, your first foray into the cloud is a big deal. You got to replace your phones. You got to set up your new call trees. You got to train your staff. You don't necessarily want to get that wrong, and you don't necessarily want to have to do that again in a year. You know, you want these things to be in 5-year increments before you have to worry about it. And so you really need a cloud communications vendor that has professional services available to help you and enough features and customization that you can pop in and do it yourself without paying any kind of third-party service for it.
At the end of the day, you know, it's all about ROI. So how do you actually know that this is actually paying for itself? I'm sure this is a question that you've gotten. So how do we actually decide on ROI for something like this in a small practice?
For sure. The easiest way that I like to look at it is count all of the missed calls or abandoned calls. So almost any phone system can show you where a missed call or where a caller hung up before you're able to help them. So if you take that per week and you take your average appointment value, whatever it is for your practice, when you multiply them, even if you're missing 20 calls, and even if you then didn't miss half of them, that's $1,500 per week, $6,000 per month extra. And so if you look at a typical UCaaS platform for your 2 to 5 providers and then their admin staff, you're going to be in around the $4,000 per year category. So it kind of pays itself off in the first 2 months of simply having a not missed call portion of that.
Yeah, those numbers definitely add up. Man, this has been very illuminating, but I have you here. You're an expert in this with AI and everything that's going on in technology. So I want to hear your opinion on where is this going, let's say 12 to 24 months from now. What's coming in healthcare communications that physician owners should start thinking about right now?
Right now, it's what does your scheduling workflows look like? That needs to be automated. You know, the world of me calling to either get a status or modify or cancel my appointment is, I should just be able to do that directly from a patient portal, or I should be able to do that directly from your website, or I should be able to do it calling and texting without talking to a human. It's just simply something that I think about, I need to do. And if I can't do it, I'm just more frustrated every day I can't do it. And so we're currently working on an Athena Health beta where you can automatically call it and modify and cancel and book your appointment within your configuration. And we're really excited to keep extending that to additional EHRs. So that's the biggest jump you'll see with these cloud communication companies, is moving more into patient engagement, where it's not just a phone call, but it's actually the tools for which you're engaging with your patients. You know, pre-visit text messages about what to expect, post-visit text messages that do not contain PHI, but direct you to the patient portal, you know, to make sure you're setting up your username and password within the EHR. So things like that. The other thing is this predictive staffing portion of it. So when you think about all the stuff we've talked about with higher than normal volume on Monday, Tuesday, or what do you do after hours, or what do you do over the weekends? There's this predictive workforce management where, based off of trends and history and EHR activities and weather, that you're expecting a disproportionate number of calls up or down. And the ability to kind of dynamically staff can save tens of thousands of dollars, making sure that you have the right folks in the clinic at the right time.
Oh, yeah, that is exciting. But why does it take 3 phone calls to just to the doctor available? Is the patient available? And then something happens, life gets in the way, and then 3 more phone calls to deal with that as well. So finally, if you could rewire one belief that physician entrepreneurs hold about technology in their practice, what would it be?
Probably the main one is that your technology adoption has to be all or nothing. It really starts with one workflow. And we talk about the fragmented communication stack. And so this is a bit of you might find yourself in a fragmented communication stack, but you can always fix it. But it's really that 80-20 rule where 80% of your communication problems are probably falling on like one or two communication workflows. So technology has gotten to the point where it's accessible by non-IT people. A lot of off-the-shelf stuff will do just fine, even in clinical workflows. And don't be afraid to just kind of try something and then expand from there. But I think every year, this type of enterprise technology, especially with AI moving into more agentic software development, it just gets easier and easier for not technical folks like myself.
I think you're pretty technical, but again, you explain it in everyday terms that anybody can understand. And again, this has been a very illuminating talk. I really appreciate you taking the time with us. And for you guys to listen more about GoTo and what they're doing, we have a website link or URL that you can go to. It's goto.com, goto.com/healthcare. I believe that's the best link, right? Yep. For folks to go to.
Try to put everything there and you can get in touch through the website. Hit us up.
All right, Adam. This has been, again, a very illuminating and you made it so educational and realize the bottom line for our practice is if you don't do it, your competitors are already doing it and it's just leaving you one step behind. Anything you want to leave with the listeners today before we end the call?
No, not too much other than appreciate what you do. I'm so glad you're doing it. Thank you for saving lives every day. And thank you, Dr. Mike, for doing this podcast as well.
Thank you guys for listening. As physician entrepreneurs, you're going to have your ups and your downs. Do something a little each day to get you closer to your goals. Maybe start up getting your AI receptionist practice up and running and keep moving forward.
You've just listened to the Bootstrap MD podcast. For more valuable resources, as well as past recordings of our show, check out our website at bootstrapmd.com. Now let's get to work.